If I were to say to you this phrase, he is a man of character, what does that mean to you? This is your chance to speak up there. What's that mean to you? He's a man of character. Okay, so it's a good sounding thing for a person to be a man of character. Now, what if I say to you the phrase, he's a real character? What's that say to you? Kind of wild. Don't know whether you can trust him or not. Can we all agree on this phrase? Character counts. Well, character counts. Yeah. Well, in that particular phrase, it's sort of implied that we're looking for good, not the bad, in the character. The question that would come up then is, what kind of character are you? Now, how many of you have ever acted? You've done something, even if it was just a non-speaking part in a church Christmas play. You know, you were the shepherd that didn't have to say anything. And how many of you have participated in something like that? No? Nothing. Not even grade school did you have to do something, you know, put on a little play or something there?
High school plays
or something like that. All right. Well, those of you that participated, how did you show your character? What are the ways in which you showed your character? Even if you didn't say anything, how did you show who you are?
You behave in a certain manner.
All right, so your actions, you're telling me, would be something that would tell the character that you are. All right, what else?
Conforming to the script. Mm-hmm.
Now, meaning what now?
If I'm a shepherd, I want to conform to the script that the play calls.
Okay. Do you had something to say as a shepherd?
Whether you said or whether you didn't.
Okay. But how did you show that you were a shepherd there then?
I had the stuff on.
Oh. You were dressed like a shepherd. All right. So, your costume can tell something about your character. Anything else?
Facial expressions
are another way to show your character. Yeah. We're missing one thing here yet. Okay. Well, we're on the right track. But inflection involves what?
Speaking.
What you say shows your character, right? What you say shows your character. About 500 years ago, William Shakespeare wrote these words, "All the world is a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages." We all are in a play, so to speak. The stage is the world. We stand on it every day. The play that we're taking part in is entitled, "To God Be the Glory." And each of us is participating in a particular act in that play. There have been many acts that have taken place prior to where we're at now. The act that we're participating is entitled, "The Life and Times of Jesus Christ." We get to play in that part of the drama. Now, like we've just said, in each play, each actor must show, either by their actions, the character that they're playing, by their way in which they choose to portray that person. Each actor tends to have somewhat liberty, we used that word this morning, liberty to portray the character in a certain way. Okay, however, he's limited by the director, our God in heaven, who's also the playwright. He's already written it out for us. And so we are participating in this great drama. We're going to look back at a previous act tonight in 1 Samuel 22. And in that act, we're going to see some characters. And I want you to pay close attention to how they portray that character as we go through on. So we begin in verse 1, where it says, David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither too. David has left Gibeah area and has run off, so to speak, and he's hiding in a cave called Adullam. Adullam is translated a refuge. And so he's taken refuge here in this cave. And now he takes on the part of defender and protector of his family. He who was despised and rejected has now become the head of all. You remember how they treated him when he was first introduced to us in the play? How he was the least. His father didn't even feel fit to call him to the feast. He left him out there watching the sheep. And how did his brothers treat him when he came to the battle with Goliath? What have you done? You've walked off and left the sheep out there. You just came here to see the battle happen, not knowing that his father had sent him on a particular mission to them. But now he shows us a picture of Christ. He has now become the head of that family. He was despised before. And in everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was contented, gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. Come, all ye who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Those are the words of our great captain, of our faith. This was surely a motley crew that showed up for David. Notice that David didn't go out and pick them and take them with him. They came to David. But he would become their captain, and these are the ones that turned into those mighty men that we'll read about in following chapters. This could have been a perfect group to start a rebellion with. Isn't that who they look for? You know, when the anarchists, they look for those people that are like this so that they can really work them up and turn them into those that will destroy things. But David never let them become rebels. They were hunted, they were chased, but they never turned against King Saul. They stood up to him, but they never turned against him. To get an idea of David's character while he's at the cave, we need to look at Psalm 142. David wrote a number of psalms during this period that we're going to be looking at in the next few chapters. Remember, he's at the cave here, a prayer when he was in the cave. I cried unto the Lord with my voice unto the Lord did I make my supplication. I poured out my complaint before him. I showed before him my trouble. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then thou knewest my path. In the way wherein I walked, have they privily laid a snare for me. I looked on my right hand and beheld, but there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul. I cried unto thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my refuge and my portion in the land of the living. Attend unto my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise thy name. The righteous shall compass me about, for thou shalt deal bountifully. Notice, where is he at? Where did he go to? The cave. What's the name of the cave? Adullam. What's it mean?
Refuge.
But while he's at the cave, what did he discover in Psalm 142? This cave is not my refuge. What's the only refuge that I have? The Lord. He's the only refuge that I have. We all like to run to some place when we're trodden down. You know, usually we run home. You know, at least when you were a kid, you could run home and hide there. But David couldn't go home, could hardly go any place. But now he realizes that no matter where he's at, the Lord is his refuge. And you'll see that time after time in these next few chapters. How he was almost to the point where disaster would happen, but the Lord was his refuge. And David went thence to Mizpah of Moab, and he said unto the king of Moab, let my father and my mother, I pray thee, come forth and be with you, till I know what God will do for me. And he brought them before the king of Moab, and they dwelt with him all the while that David was in the hold. So David took his role as family protector seriously. His parents were old. How fast can you move now? You know, I don't move fast at all. You see me get up out of the seat there. Sometimes I'm late getting up. And so David knew that he might have to move at any second's notice. And so he takes his family and he takes them down to the king of Moab and requests that they can stay there with him. Now this was a pretty decent choice, because the king of Moab's not going to have that good of a relationship with who? Saul. Okay? And he even sees a chance here, well, maybe this David person will cause a revolt to happen in Israel, and we'll have a better advantage over things then. So he takes care of his family. Does that tell you anything about his character? Actions speak loudly. It said that they speak louder than words. And the prophet Gad said unto David, abide not in the hold, depart, and get thee into the land of Judah. Then David departed and came into the forest of Hereth. David had somebody in his group to advise him. And a good sign of character is that not only did he get the advice, he took the advice. But when you look at the advice, what will you say? Wait a minute, I'm safe down here in this cave, and you want me to go to Judah, which is right next to Gibeah, where Saul is? You want me to go out there? And he could go out there because what did he learn in the cave? The Lord is my refuge. Well, now the scene changes for us, and we add more members to the cast as they enter. Oh, by the way, we all enter. Each one of us was cast into our position. You know, in ages past, when the play was written, we were cast already. He had a big casting call there. And he says, okay, you're gonna play the part of Bob Laird when it comes time to go on. Chris Claypool's gonna, that's Chris Claypool. That's her part. She's going to play it. Jenny Haas, she has her own part that she has to play. We all have our own part. We all were cast into this part, and we all came on stage the same way. Now, by birth. We were put into the on the stage by birth. Ready to go. Well, here we go. Here's another character that is in the drama here. When Saul heard that David was discovered and the men that were with him, now Saul abode at Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, having his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. We come back to the former hero who's now become the raving paranoid maniac here, Prince. Saul sits at home while loyal spies seek out David. And this is the second time we see him sit under that same tree. He did it earlier, I think back in chapter 8 or 9, one of those, he was sitting there. And we also see him sitting with what? The spear. The spear, where? He's under the tree, but his spear is where? In his hand. Why do you have a spear in your hand? Well, twice before he had a spear in the hand to do what? Throw it at David. And so we see here what is starting to happen to him. He can't trust anybody. He's got a spear in his hand, and he's ready to defend himself whenever it comes to happen here. Then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, "Hear now, ye Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give you every one of you fields that all of you have conspired against me?" What's that tell you about his character? He's paranoid. You're all against me. I don't have anybody here. And so he takes his own people to task, his own tribe. And he says, you know, if you help him, is he going to give you anything for helping him? You know, you're better off here with me. I'm the one that can give you the stuff. "And there's none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse." He's found out that he can't even trust Jonathan. "And there's none of you that is sorry for me, or showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day." That's just the thing that's needed for the unseen character to enter here. The devil enters and performs his part and influences another, usually an unbeliever, and it's just so here. "And then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, 'I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub. And he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him victuals, and gave him a sword of Goliath the Philistine.'" I can imagine that's about how he's saying it too. You know, he did all this. Well, after that report, Saul's paranoia turns him against the priests at Nob. Now not only has the Spirit of God left him, but he's going to cut off any access that he has to God now. When you're on the downward slope, it just keeps getting worse and worse. "And then the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest and the son of Ahitub and all his house, father's house, the priests that were in Nob, and they came all of them to the king. And Saul said, 'Hear now, thou son of Ahitub.' And he answered, 'Here I am, my lord.' And Saul said unto him, 'Why have ye conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword, and hast inquired of God for him, that he should rise against me to lie in wait as at this day?' And then Ahimelech answered the king and said, 'And who is so faithful among all thy servants as David, which is the king's son-in-law, and goeth at thy bidding, and is honorable in thine house?'" Well, not knowing Saul's hatred for David now, Ahitub defends David, which is not something that Saul wants to hear. "Did I then begin to inquire of God for him? Be it far from me. Let not the king impute anything unto his servants, nor to all the house of my father. For thy servant knew nothing of all of this, less or more." Ahimelech pleads his innocence before Saul, but to no avail. And the king said, "Thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou and all thy father's house. And the king said unto the footmen that stood about him, Turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests. The believers that are standing around with Saul wouldn't commit that sin. But the unbeliever had no problem sinning. The foreigner, the outsider, the one that's not part. And the king said to Doeg, Turn thou and fall upon the priest. And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priest and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. And Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and sucklings, and oxen and asses and sheep with the edge of the sword. Wasn't enough just to kill Hittib and those that were with him. He went and killed everybody he could find at Nob too. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar showed David that Saul had slain the Lord's priest. And David said unto Abiathar, I knew it that day, when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of thy father's house. And in reality, he did partially do that because he had told a lie to Ahitub when he was there in order to convince him to do what he needed done. But he says to Abiathar, Abide thou with me, fear not, for he that seeketh my life seeketh thy life. But with me thou shalt be in safeguard. He's going to preserve what's left of the priesthood, too. David writes Psalm 52 on this occasion. Do you want to take a look there to the chief musician, Mishael? A psalm of David when Doeg the Edomite came and told Saul and said unto him, David is come to the house of Ahimelech. Why boastest thou self in mischief? O mighty man, the goodness of God endureth continually. Thy tongue deviseth mischiefs like a sharp razor, working deceitfully. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than speak righteousness. Selah. Thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place and root thee out of the land of the living. The righteous shall also see and fear and shall laugh at him. Lo, this man is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness. But I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. I will praise thee forever because thou hast done it, and I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints. And so he's going to wait upon the Lord. In chapter 23, then they told David, saying, Behold, the Philistines fight against Keilah, and they robbed the threshing floors. Therefore David inquired of the Lord, saying, Shall I go and smite these Philistines? And the Lord said unto David, Go and smite the Philistines and save Keilah. What do you learn about David there?
He prays before he does stuff. He goes to God and asks.
Okay, he praises, goes to God. But in these first verses in this chapter here,
inquired of the Lord, but wouldn't a priest that came to him that survived have an ephod? And somehow the priest used the ephod to find out what the Lord's will was.
Yeah. And it's more explicitly states that later on here in this chapter. So that's how he inquires of the Lord. So that's one thing we see. He inquires of the Lord. But a little earlier there, what does it tell you when they people come and tell him what's happening? Does he just sit back and say, "Oh, I'm okay, that's what's happening"? Huh? Well, he blamed himself back there for what he did with Ahitub.
He was concerned. He wanted to do something about.
He's a man that's concerned about who? Himself? No, he's considered about others. This whole town over here is suffering because of the Philistines. So David desires to help, but this is a dangerous project for three reasons. One, he only has 400 untrained men with him. He'll make a second enemy of the Philistines. It's bad enough that you got to run away from one enemy, let alone try to run away from two of them at the same time. And three, he'll expose his whereabouts to Saul. So before he jumps into this dangerous endeavor, he does what he does. He inquires of the Lord. But the Lord told him to do what? Go and save. But in the next verse, what do we see? And David's men said unto him, "Behold, we be afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we come to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines?" Then David inquired of the Lord yet again, and the Lord answered him, said, "Arise, go down to Keilah, for I will deliver the Philistines into thy hand." A good leader is always concerned for the people that he's leading. They brought a concern to him. They were afraid. And so instead of just, "Oh, buck up, let's get moving here," instead of that, he went back to the Lord and inquired not only for himself, but also for them. So we see a characteristic of leadership in David here. So David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines and brought away their cattle and smote them with a great slaughter. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. Once again, that mighty warrior that had so much great success in the battles with the Philistines before shows up here. Now, one would think that he'd be set here now. One would think that, having helped these people, but not so. And it came to pass when Abiathar the son of Ahimelech fled to David to Keilah, that he came down with ephod in his hand. And it was told Saul that David was come to Keilah. And Saul said, "God hath delivered him into my hand." Here we see Saul. Okay, you can just see him clapping his hands and rubbing them and saying, I got him now. He's put himself here at Keilah. And it was told all delivered him into my hand, for he is shut in by entering into a town that hath gates and bars. So the trouble with David is that, and Saul, is that David has always been able to slip off away from him because he was never stuck in one particular place. And so here he is, just like at the Alamo, they're stuck in the side of this place, and David hears this, and he realizes, I don't want to be stuck in here. And Saul called all the people together to war, to go down to Keilah, to besiege David and his men. And David knew that Saul secretly practiced mischief against him, and he said to Abiathar the priest, "Bring hither the ephod." Then said David, "O Lord God of Israel, thy servant hath certainly heard that Saul seeketh to come to Keilah to destroy the city for my sake. Will the men of Keilah deliver me up into his hand? Will Saul come down? As thy servant hath heard, O Lord God of Israel, I beseech thee, tell thy servant. And the Lord said unto him, and the Lord said, he will come down. Then said David, will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men into the hand of Saul? And the Lord said, they will deliver thee up. This is just an example of using the Urim and the Thummim to determine God's will. The questions are always in a yes or no fashion. And so when they pull the stones out, they will either say yes, that's what's going to happen, or no. Or they can pull them out and it says, can't tell. They pull both of them out and they lay them down and it's neither one. And so, while that's not true in this particular point, it is others where you hear, inquired of the Lord, but there was no answer. So when you see that, you'll understand what was happening. In these two verses here, we learn something about the omniscience of God. God's knowledge extends not only to what will happen, but also to what might happen. If David stays at Keilah, then Saul will come down. Also, if David stays then, the men of Keilah will turn him over to Saul. So we can see that the plan of a God allows for many variations as it presses onward to the finale. Only one possible ending, and that will be God will be God. Then David and his men, which were about 600, oh, he's picked up a couple of hundred here, arose and departed out of Keilah and went whithersoever they could go. And it was told Saul that David was escaped from Keilah and he forbore to go down. Well, now we see he doesn't go because David's not going to be there. So Saul didn't have to choose to go down. And David abode in the wilderness in strongholds and remained in a mountain in the wilderness of Ziph, and Saul sought him every day. But God delivered him not into his hand. While the actor on stage has much latitude in expressing his part, ultimately it is the director that has full control of what goes on in the play. And God, as a director, made sure that Saul didn't catch up to him at any time. Well, I don't think we'll get finished with the rest of the chapter there. But you read through it and see what happens in this particular part. And perhaps we'll be able to pick it up next time. Our gracious Father, as we have looked at your word tonight, may we learn that each of us has his place in this time that we live, and we have a responsibility to show good character in how we live, because we desire most of all to emulate your Son, Jesus Christ, to glorify him and to glorify you in everything that we say, everything that we do, everything that we put on to wear, every little action that we take. We ask that it might be for your glory and that you might not be disturbed at the way in which we do things. May we always do them according to your will, as you've written to us in the scriptures. And we ask this in Jesus our Lord's name. Amen.